Welcome to This Family Life, a podcast where parents share their stories on how they organise the chaos of family life. My name's Nicole Avery, and as the host, I have the absolute pleasure of interviewing parents of all family types and sizes to find out the simple things they do to make family life easier and more fun. Welcome to episode 25 of This Family Life. It's a super interesting interview I have today. I talked to Shay. Shay lives in the northern suburbs of Melbourne. She has three girls and two of them have been diagnosed on the autism spectrum. And we talk a bit about that, but we also talk about how she's chosen to educate her kids. She home educates them. And it's gone through a few different, stages of how she's done that. And we have a look, at what her day looks like and how she manages that. I asked a question which I think probably a lot of homeschoolers get asked is, how do you cope with being around the kids all day? And she's got great answers. And I think things that will give you quite a surprise about how it works, and maybe it's not as hard as you think. I know I certainly came away feeling that. She talks about why she chose home education for her kids. She has a great tip about she has and taking a smoko to have a break from the kids and morning tea, which I really loved. She talked about also how she needed to change her spontaneous approach, which is the natural way that she approaches things, to a more, rhythm-based approach so it would accommodate the needs of her girls. She talks about how she coped with the assessment period and the diagnostic period of the autism spectrum diagnosis, which I think is a really tough time for a lot of families. And then towards the end, we talk a little bit more about her and how she started to make some small changes to improve her health and wellness. She also mentioned a number of great books, which I've put links to in the show notes. Show notes, of course, you can find at planningwithkids.com/podcast. If you want to get in touch, you can get in touch via social media, Planning Queen on Twitter, also Instagram if you're there, and it's Planning with Kids on Facebook. And if you've been enjoying the episodes, it would be really lovely if you could give us a review on iTunes. It really does help make a difference. And now please take the time to enjoy the interview with Shay. Today I'm talking to Shay. I've known Shay for quite a few years. Shay is a Melbourne mum also, and I'm going to hand over to Shay so she can tell us a little bit about her gorgeous family.
Hi, I'm Shay. I live in sort of Melbourne's outer north, I guess. I've got three girls who are 11, 9 and 7, and I live with them and my husband and our dog and our chickens and our veggie garden. And we've sort of always home educated our kids. Two of them have a autism spectrum diagnosis, and that's pretty much my life, I guess.
it's a pretty decent life. I mean, you must have had three under quite a young age. What was the age gap when you had your third child? What was your oldest?
Oh, okay. The planning of children, it was not actually my forte. It was family planning. Tanner turned 4, my eldest, just 2 weeks after my youngest was born. So there's about 2.5 years between Tanner and Willow, my older two, and then there's only 19 months between Willow and Harper, my younger two. I reckon I look like the poster child for child spacing for a couple of years.
I think it does have its bonuses now. Do you find that, now because they are so close in age, that makes things a bit easier in terms of entertaining and finding things that they like together?
Actually, that's been great, I've got to say. The first year was the easiest because babies under one don't need very many interesting things. When I had a one-year-old, a three-year-old and a five-year-old, it wasn't necessarily ideal. But now that they're bigger, yeah, for sure, they all like the same sort of things. And because you ease up too with what you care about your precious firstborn doing compared to your thirdborn, they've seen a lot of the same movies and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, that's actually worked out really well.
Now, you use the term home education, and I will say that there was a phase where I actually really seriously considered doing some of that with my kids, but I think there was a part of me that just thought, I don't know if I can do it, but I'd never get a break from them. I'd love to hear, what was your rationale for choosing to homeschool, and how do you cope, with them not being off for hours a day at school?
Okay, my eldest she just wasn't ready when she was sort of 5. Also, I had a baby when she was 4, which was the year she would have gone to 4-year-old kinder in Victoria. And we were doing all these cool things, and we had, I was involved in the Australian Breastfeeding Association then, and we went to playgroups. So we were already doing sort of 2 things a week. And I thought, why muck up her week and mine with a new baby and a toddler to go to kinder. So we didn't do that. And then the year she would have started school, she had a lot of separation anxiety. And I thought, we'd met a family a few years before, and they had home educated their kids their whole lives, and their kids were great. They were in their teens and tweens, I suppose, when we knew them, and they were always off on taking cool holidays. The kids were really interesting. The family were really close, and the kids sort of weren't what I had known home education to be, which, me being Gen X, the idea of home education was you're either a fundamentalist Christian or you're a weirdo. And they were just this really cool family. And then the more families I sort of met through, I'm an unashamedly hippie la-la style parent. So I met lots of other homeschooling families, and there's a big community in Victoria, and they were always going to camp. And I thought, maybe we won't send Tanner for prep, because she really wasn't ready. And I thought, and then we'll see how it goes from there. So we decided we just try it out for prep.
Okay.
And then, because, you know, you don't have to make the decision when they're six for the rest of their lives. Kids change schools, or they're in and out of school, or they go to different types of school. So I figured, well, if homeschooling doesn't work, we can always send her to school. School's not going anywhere. And it worked really well. And then we started joining these groups and doing these interesting things and making connections with these other families. So it just kind of rolled on from there. And then the longer we've not gone to school, the harder it is for me to see how that would work for us. Home education has been probably the best decision we've ever made for our family and our particular circumstance. As far as the kids being in your business, they sort of, particularly kids that have never been to school, I'm sure it's different for kids that have maybe gone for a couple of years and come out. But they have different expectations of what you as a parent provide. School provides a very rigid structure. We do this, and after that we do this, and then we get this break, and then we do this, and we do this. And you're kind of expected to do what you're told the whole day. Kids who don't have that sort of, 6 hours of hardcore instruction really get good at entertaining themselves. So they certainly have periods in the day, and, yes, the hardest years actually were the years before they were school age. So maybe even the first year. So maybe when they were – maybe up to when they were like 7, 5 and 3, that was still pretty hardcore parenting, but I still had kids that weren't school age. Now they're bigger. I mean, we do a little bit of bookwork in the morning most mornings, maybe like before lunch, and then I can go hours without anybody speaking to me.
That sounds pretty all right.
It's pretty good. They've just sort of gotten used to, I'm not there to entertain them all day or to provide 12 hours of you do this, followed by this, followed by this. So they become pretty, able to find their own stuff to do. And now that they're bigger too, I've always done what I call taking smoko from when they were quite small, which is to make a cup of tea. And unless there's blood or fire, I'm drinking a cup of tea.
I love that.
No questions, don't interrupt me. And I've been known to drag that out to when my very cluey middle child will say, "That's got to be cold. Like, are you really still drinking that?" Not really.
I think that's a really good strategy though, because I certainly said to my kids, I actually just need 5 minutes by myself. I'm going to go sit outside for 5 minutes, and I don't expect that, unless there's a drama or some family emergency, I don't expect to hear from you. And they do sort of get it. Sometimes they'll come back within like 1 minute, and I'll just look at them with this look on my face and I go, "Oh, sorry." It's like,
yeah. Oh, you can't see me through the computer, but I wave the teacup. I kind of hold it up like, still on smoko. I go for about half an hour, and now they're bigger too, I will send them outside. I'll say, "Everybody outside for an hour," and they'll just go outside.
Do you know, I do that too, and some people look at me as if like that's like really harsh, hardcore, but like especially when it's summer and it's a beautiful day and they're all just mucking about inside the house and they're starting to get each other's nerves, I'll just go, "You know what, that's it. Everyone outside for half an hour." And they may grumble at the start, but they move on. And kids are great at then going, "Okay, let's go do this on the trampoline," or "Let's go do that." They just sometimes just need the push in the right direction. And I think it's completely okay to push them in the right direction.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but we've got a really ace backyard. They've got a trampoline and a cubby house and lots of we've got a mud kitchen so they can make potions or whatever out there. So it's not like I'm sending them out to a concreted courtyard with nothing.
I'd love to hear a bit more, because I've heard this about a mud kitchen, and I think probably it wasn't really a thing when my kids were younger. What does yours look like? I think it'd be a fantastic idea.
Ours is a really cheap one that my husband built. My husband's a tradie, so he's very handy at building things. We got just a double sink off the local buy swap sale group for about $20, and he built a stand for it. So it's just a double sink, two sinks, two drying racks, and then it's just got a whole bunch of op shop pots and pans.
That's so cool.
It is truly that ours is that simple. I've seen beautiful ones online that are made out of pallets and sand. Proper stands, and ours is like just this really cheap.
But I don't think the kids would care. It's still
no, they don't, and they end up filled with mud, like essentially. And we grow herbs and stuff, so they can cut them, and often it's full of food dye and goodness knows what else.
Oh, fantastic! So when you were talking about your day a little, if you wouldn't mind just expanding about a bit on your day. So you said you do some book work in the morning. What does that look like? And I guess how do you targeted the three different age levels that you've got running?
Okay, well, that's really changed for us over the years. We started off being unschoolers, which means sort of no really child-led learning. So what they're interested in, you can do some stuff on, but not necessarily bookwork. Definitely not you're this old, so you need to know these things, or that there's a body of information that every child needs to be exposed to in their lifetime. And I'm still a really big believer in that. I think there's lots of stuff that kids can learn when they're older if they need to, or that they might not necessarily be ready to learn at 7 or 8, or they might be really ready to learn at 6 if they're interested in it. So we do go with the flow with our kids in that respect a lot. But my kids are late risers, so they probably get up around 8. And then now that they're older, I go for a walk. I leave them at home. Most mornings I come home, we all have breakfast together, and then we sit down and we all get, you know, out of our PJs. Some days the joys of homeschooling, Nicole, is that some days you can just do it in your pajamas.
I love that idea.
And then the three girls are at very different levels and interests. So we use a little bit of sort of Waldorf, or in Australia we call it Steiner, inspired curriculum for their sort of language arts. So that might be reading some stuff together and doing some copy work and drawing some pictures. We use two computer programs. We use, do you want me to say which ones we use?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, we use Word Shark and Number Shark.
We've used Word Shark before. Word Shark's great.
Yeah, great. They're really, really good. And for kids who might have some learning difficulties, which one of mine does, they're just fantastic. They all do bits of that, and they've obviously all got their own login for that. So one of them might be working on the computer, one might be reading with me, one might be doing their copy work, and then we'll all change. So I've usually got something for one to do on the computer or an iPad, one doing something like set with me, and one who might be going on with work without me. So I've got sort of a bit of a system going. And we might do that for probably only an hour and a half. And that's usually enough, because it's, you know, one-on-one learning, it's quite direct, and we're not covering everything.
I know, because that was one of the things that when I was looking into homeschooling, because I thought, oh gosh, how am I going to like have time to do everything else if I've got to spend 6 hours teaching? But the thing was, that's what I learned, it was only like a couple of hours a day that you actually, because of the intensity and what that one-on-one stuff, and then you look at the stuff that, you know, like for example, my kids are in the moment doing a cabaret production. So I think they're spending like an hour a day on the cabaret production. You don't have all those like other things sort of in it.
I think the estimate is that if you've got two kids and you're even doing the full distance education package, it takes about 2 hours a day.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and when I say we don't cover everything, we don't cover everything in bookwork. So my kids might not sit down and write a big essay about history, but we might watch horrible histories or go to Cryle Castle. Or when we went to Tasmania, we did a lot of reading about, the white settlers in Tasmania and the convict places. And then we went to Port Arthur. So whilst it might not look like what learning looks like at school, it's not as if it's not being covered.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So in terms of, like, you have to register with Victorian government, is that right? Is that what you have to do?
Yeah, you register with the VQRA, Victorian Qualifying. Oh, isn't that terrible? I can't think of what it stands for. But, there's a qualifying agency that you register with to say that your children will be home educated and that you agree to cover the 8 key learning areas. And you can cover those however you like. Some people choose to cover them with a lot of curriculum. Some people choose to cover them with a lot of sort of real-life learning and maybe a little bit of bookwork like we do. Some people might choose to be unschoolers, but unschooling still covers a lot of things. It just doesn't look like what it looks like in school. In fact, I think the biggest mistake people make when they homeschool is to try and replicate school at home.
That's what I was going to say. Because
that's hard.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, and you pull your kids out of school or you choose not to send them to school because you're choosing something different from that model. So to then try and bring it into your house, it's actually not the same. There's not as many, there's too many hours in the day, I think. Whereas at home you can say, oh, wow, my kids, like my eldest, for example, is really interested in dogs, loves dogs, all things about dogs. So she's currently doing her own project on dogs. So she chose the topic, but that's involving writing and researching and using a computer and using the library and biology. So it just looks a little bit different.
Do you have to like do any assessments? Like I know in obviously in the school system there's NAPLAN. Do your girls have to sit a NAPLAN or any other sort of assessment so that I guess that body knows that you are teaching your kids or anything like that?
That varies state to state. In Victoria, where I live, we've got the best regulations for the parents where no, you don't. You can choose to go to a school and sit the NAPLAN, but NAPLAN kind of compares school to school. So that I think is probably, and it, you know, kids who go to school and parents who send their kids to school, most of them don't think it's awesome either. So not many home educators do NAPLAN for their kids. I would say it would be a tiny percent. Many do use distance education and that can be sent off to be marked and you can get, you know, keep up with the same work that kids the same age in a school would be doing. You just agree to cover the learning areas, but they're pretty flexible with how you do that. You can be reported. I think it would be, they would be suspecting something like actual neglect or child abuse. And then they would want proof that you were not just, you know, say unschooling as benign neglect for your kids. But I'm yet to meet a family who are not actively interested in their kids' education, even if it doesn't look like school at home.
I think if you've made the commitment to have your kids at home for you and not put them into school, I think I would imagine that you actually are wanting to educate them. So,
I think you could do school as a way lazier parent. You could just drop them off and pick them up and not be involved in anything else.
Oh, I 100% agree. 100% agree. Because that's one of the reasons I didn't do homeschooling, because I thought it'd be too hard and too much work.
Yeah, I think it's apples and oranges. It's really hard to compare. I think a lot of people say that, oh, I couldn't do that because – but you've also got to remember that I don't have to deal with parent-teacher nights or NAPLAN or uniform or bullying at school or my kid not keeping up to another kid who's their age if they're not ready or being really far ahead of those kids. So it's apples and oranges. They're really hard to compare. So I've got different things that I have to deal with day to day, but then the things that the school mums deal with are not my problem.
That's very, very true. So how do you work out what to teach them across a year? Do you have a bit of a plan or do you just, is it just more like following the interest, but like you're using tools like WordShark to keep increasing their level of learning?
Yeah, I'm definitely using WordShark and NubbaShark for those things. And they just kind of pop through. My younger one's doing reading eggs as well. She seems to like that a lot more than the other two. So I'm happy to go with that. Because they're my kids and because it's, you know, if you're talking about parent teacher ratios, it's 1 to 3, I can see where I can just watch them go forward. But as far as what I plan to do in a year, I've got like I said, with the Waldorf sort of curriculum, I've got a guide that tells you what they would be doing in the schools year to year. And then I just sort of pick and choose the bits that I think my kids would enjoy and that they would get a lot out of. And then they've always got other things they want to do themselves as well. So then I always make sure we've got time where we're just at home, where they've got time to, you know, immerse themselves in, you know, dogs or whatever it is. Because we were also, we do a lot of other activities too. So I think people imagine that it's, you know, your home schooling, whereas we go to a park meetup once a week, which is pretty much the whole second half of the day. We go to a homeschool drama group once a week. Which is a couple of hours and a bit of driving. And then my girls all do dancing. So we've got lots of other things outside of the sitting around the desk doing some book work or going to the library that keeps us really busy.
No, that's great, because one of the questions I was going to ask you was, do they have extracurricular activities, which they obviously do. I mean, that's pretty much like a standard kid would have, sort of, you know, anywhere between sort of 1 to 3 outside activities. So that obviously would take over a socializing component as well, because I guess that's probably one of the things that you probably hear is, oh, how do your kids get to socialize, blah blah blah. But I mean, that's would offer a huge range of socialization for your girls, I imagine.
Yeah, and they've got their own little group of friends, and some are homeschooled and some are not. And so we see them at the homeschool meetup once a week, and we see them at drama, and then we've got their friends through dancing, and their other friends that we've known their whole lives that we see quite a bit as well. But yeah, so I have to make sure that whilst we're on, okay, here's what we're going to cover in a year, here's the bookwork we're going to do, but I really want to sort of make sure we've got spare time for them to get into stuff they're interested in, lots of time for them to play. I think play is a very, very important part of kids' lives that gets overlooked. So I'm forever scheduling in like half a day of nothing, or we'll be home for this period and nobody's allowed on Skype and you know, everybody has to go outside, or just big chunks of time where it's not taken up with what I want to cover in the year and what they're doing with extracurricular work. And time to sort of make spontaneous plans. We go to things like the zoo or the city or stuff a lot. And we do homeschool camps too. So we're actually ridiculously busy, and I'm forever looking at my diary and trying to schedule in chunks of nothing.
I love the idea of scheduling chunks of nothing because I think it's really important. And I think it's something like I could see some of my kids absolutely, they all need it, but some need it more so than others, to the point where my 10-year-old, he is a bit of a night owl, so he tends to read later at night, and even if I turn the light off, he doesn't go to sleep. But he still likes me to wake him up earlier in the morning because he just works through a system where he needs some time to himself in the morning before he has to get into the fray of the whole school thing. So he needs at least half an hour where he can sit on in the middle of winter. He literally likes to sit on the heating vent by himself and read a book for half an hour before he then gets ready for school.
A man after my own heart.
Yeah, but that's just the way he operates. So, you know, like this morning I thought, oh, I really would like him to sleep more, but I went and woke him up because he's just not himself if he doesn't get that time. And I think just having time where you are just doing exactly what you want to do is so important for kids. Does your husband, their dad, play a role in their education, or are you the one solely responsible for it?
Well, he plays a role in as far as he's their dad and he's around. As far as sitting down and doing bookwork in the morning, no, that's mostly me. But, you know, we've chosen to have one income to homeschool the kids, so that was the choice we made, and his job made more money than mine, so he's the main breadwinner, or the only breadwinner in our house. So he works 5 or 6 days a week, so it's just through him not being home. But homeschooling, I mean, all kids ask questions at all hours of the day or
exactly,
night.
Exactly, yeah.
So he's definitely on board with, you know, he comes on camps with us. He answers. He's way better at maths than me.
So same in my house.
If I've got something, I think, like I said to him the other week, can you do long division still? And he goes, yeah. And I said, oh, no, I'm out. I can't do that. You'll have to teach them long division. And then he went, do they really need to know long division with a phone in their pocket as adults? And I thought, yeah, probably not.
Oh, that's funny.
But no, so he does take on part of the role of home education. But as if we're talking about the what looks like school at home, not that bit, but all the rest of it, which comes under the sort of life learning banner that I think is probably 80% of my kids' lives.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned earlier that you've had two of your girls have been diagnosed on the spectrum, and I guess I know that you haven't been a great one for labels. How have those diagnoses, I guess, helped you with working through the issues with your girls?
Well, I think for me, the feeling funny about labels was something that I felt before when I was quite ill-educated about them, really. And didn't know much about it. So I probably had reservations before because particularly, like I said, in the sort of hippie parenting community, it's not something a lot of people do. But I could see my youngest girl was diagnosed first a lot earlier and younger than my eldest girl, who are the two of my kids who are on the spectrum. But when she needed extra help, things that, and I was not understanding a lot of what was going on. And I've found labels to be nothing but helpful because they just help her to be understood better. They, both of my girls, they help people to cut them both some slack. So we had a problem, let's say with my youngest when she was 3, she was doing things like pulling her hair out and hiding. And so we would lose her at somebody's house. And, I started thinking, and with the pulling of the hair out, we had to keep her hair really, you know, we cut it quite short because she was just pulling chunks of hair out. And I didn't know what to do. I thought, oh, this is just spiraling out of control kind of thing. And then when we took her for all the assessments, part of what triggered me into it was that I thought if she needs to see a psychologist or people later, they can meet her halfway without having to go through all this backstory every time. Because we took her to somebody initially, and it's just a lot of filling in of forms and giving family history and that to start with. And the more I got into it, the more I thought, oh, it's just so much easier when, you know, they can understand part of her to start with. And it is a part of both of my kids. It's not, it's just a neurological difference, but it explains a lot of their behaviour.
Yeah, absolutely. So have you had to make any changes to how you organise things at home to cater for the girls' needs?
Yes. I am a very spontaneous, laid-back kind of parent, and that doesn't work for kids on the spectrum. So we've had to become much more invested in having a really reliable rhythm, and we've got a big visual chart about what's going on in the week. We have to be quite predictable with what's going on. I can't just say things like, yeah, today we're going to do this random thing. Which, and also to just be like, well, today we'll sleep in and tomorrow if they wake up early we can do this and we'll do some schoolwork today but we won't do any next week. For my girls, it's really, predictability is very important and it really lowers their anxiety, and also to be able to know what's coming up next and just to have that sort of smooth, predictable rhythm in place has been a game changer for us. So that's really had to change the way I parent, because that's not naturally how I am as a parent or as a human.
So did you find it hard, Shay?
I found it really hard and I really resisted it. So I kept thinking, no, it's worked up till now, but it hadn't. It worked for me, but not necessarily for them. And now it's like I said, I use a schedule and we book things in. I say no to a lot of things where I personally am up for anything, but I have to sort of take a step back and think, oh, will that actually be fun for them or will it be fun for me? And if it would be fun for me, I could go at night with a friend. You know, my kids like, we go see things at the art gallery or whatever, and there's an upcoming exhibition that I really want to go and see and I thought they'd want to go and see. And so the friends were going and I said, yes, that sounds great, we'll go. And then I thought about it, and we've had a disaster at one before where there was a lot of music and it was very dark. And so then I emailed and said, hey, is it dark inside? Dark's a big trigger for one of my girls, and noise and unpredictable sounds are a big trigger for another one. What's it like inside? And they came back and they said, it's very dark inside and there's this and there's music here and there's a rotating. And I thought, yeah, that's not going to be fun. So I emailed the parents back and said, no, we won't be coming. And then I'll book tickets with a friend and we'll go another time. So things like that have been where initially I would have been like, yeah, we'll come to that. That sounds fun. Yeah, but really stop and think about whether it will actually be fun. And as with the case with a lot of girls on the spectrum, they're very good at masking, so they can sort of keep it together, and then, you know, we'll have like no sleep for a week or lots of meltdowns at home. So thinking about the follow-on effects from doing something that might not necessarily be in everybody's best interest. And also being aware that my middle child is not on the spectrum and she likes to do lots of things. So there's a bit of a balancing act there about getting extra stuff for her.
This is a lot of things to take into account, isn't it? And I guess it makes sense, because I guess the aftermath, although you would have enjoyed it, the aftermath is so much harder, and it's nothing more distressing, I think, than as a parent to see your kids suffering. So it is one of those things that you have to, I guess, take that whole bigger picture on. What advice would you give to parents? Because I know that for a few readers, I've got some parents who are currently undergoing, they think they know what the outcome's going to be, but they're going through that assessment process at the moment. What advice would you have to parents who, I guess, are in that phrase of just sort of, some are thinking, oh, no, I'm fine, and some are thinking, no, oh, I don't think they're right or whatever. It's a difficult period, that assessment period. What advice would you give to parents going through that stage?
The assessment period is very difficult. It's also assessment by nature magnifies their difficulties. So you spend a lot of time talking about what your kids can't do and what they're bad at and what upsets them and what is difficult in your day-to-day life. And I found that just incredibly draining as a parent, because, of course, I think my kids are awesome. Yes, they have autism and other various comorbid things, but ultimately they're my girls and I love them and I love everything about them and I don't want them to change, but I do want to help them with areas they have difficulty in. So just spending months and months talking about with different people, because you have to see, you know, different specialists to get a diagnosis. So you essentially spend a lot of time talking about all the difficult things that your child has and all the things that they're bad at, and that's difficult. So it's good to have another person who's maybe been there to talk through with it. I think that's, or join a Facebook group of parents who have kids on the spectrum. I found those invaluable, just getting on there and saying, oh, this is so draining. I just, you know, I'm finding this really upsetting, or my kid's having a really bad day and, you know, they've been crying for 2 hours because they moved their favourite show or whatever. So to have other people to sort of get it, because a lot of people still don't understand autism. and they will be, oh, well, they're just badly behaved, or this, you could just do this and it changed, or I don't see it. They don't seem autistic to me. So to have other parents to talk about it with is, I think, is important. Other parents who understand. Finding the right specialist is really important too. Finding the right team for you. Never hesitate in getting somebody else. Like, one of my kids is onto her third psychologist because they have been helpful, but maybe not the right person for her. So never feel like you're tethered to the one person. There's lots of professionals out there that can be amazing and amazing help. And if you find something, it should, all therapy and, I mean, diagnosis, if we're talking about diagnosis, just find the people that are right for you, I think, because there are, and it is expensive, and it really is a privilege afforded to people who can pay for it, unless you would choose to wait. My youngest was diagnosed through the Royal Children's Autism Unit, and they were amazing, but we did have to wait. But we just were not in a financial position to pay for a private diagnosis at that point. But there are other options out there. So don't feel locked into one group of specialists.
I think that's excellent advice. I think you know, often when you're going through something difficult, that shared learning of having people to support you, I think, is awesome advice. But sometimes we go into our bunker when things are hard too. So as hard as it is to get out of your bunker and go and get that, you know, contact someone or use a Facebook group, I think that people get real benefits from that. I'm going to change tact a little here and go move a bit more into just you, Shay, if that's okay. I know you've been moving, you've been getting into moving more and eating better recently. What was your motivation around that, and how's that working for you at the moment?
I think everybody with little kids has a few years where you end up being last. And then, like what happened to me, if you're not careful, that becomes the default. You end up being the last person. You look after everybody else. And I was just finding that I was tired all the time and just, you know, not feeling the best. And I thought, they're big enough now, I can take a bit of time for myself. And I should have really done it years ago. I should have not accepted that was my lot forever when they were tiny. Because, I think when children are small, it's easy to fall into that. And it is somewhat essential to their, particularly, you know, if you've got kids up during the night or you're breastfeeding or you've taken 2 years off to stay home or whatever, that does sort of fall to you a bit. And I found one of the best advice for me in that period was actually just to go with it, just to not fight, just do what has to be done. But then it gets to a point where you realise you're still doing that and everybody's actually capable of being without you for a period of time.
Absolutely. So how did you start to make the change, Shay? Because I know that it is hard once you're in that default format, is about putting yourself a bit, you know, behind everyone else's interest. How did you make the start to change?
Well, I had to change. I've got problems with autoimmune stuff and hormones and whatever. So I started listening to podcasts when I was walking. So I would take a walk and I would listen to a podcast. And my normal podcasts are the true crime podcasts, which I adore. But, you know, they make you walk faster. But I started listening to some more podcasts related to these health problems I was having. And I found a lot of those, right, well, you know, that's one thing I could do. And just taking one little bit at a time and sort of adding it to my week, and then just refusing to buy other things, you know, okay, well, I'm only going to shop for this stuff. And if that's in the house, then that's all we'll eat. And just making little goals and trying to get to those, you know, week to week, rather than sort of saying, right, today I'm going to walk for 2 hours, you know, making this huge big change in a day, because I don't think that's sustainable for anybody. And it's not helpful. It doesn't actually make you feel better either.
Because then if you don't achieve it, you feel bad. So then you generally go back into all the bad habits that you were trying to stop in the first place, because you're dwelling on how bad you feel because you've not achieved your goal. Those small steps. And it's that, like, I think, you know, I've listened to some podcasts too, and like sometimes when people are going through change, the first thing is, okay, we'll just start drinking more water. Just for a few weeks, just start doing that one simple thing, and then that's okay. And then, okay, now next week, now drink more water and go for a walk a couple of days a week. It's just, it doesn't have to be massive and dramatic, but small things really add up over time if you can build them in and make them sustainable.
And it becomes easier too. Like, even just like, I love a shop coffee, would have 2 espressos a day if I could afford it. But that was becoming a thing. Like, I got really addicted to going to the shop and buying a coffee for a variety of reasons. One, so that I could have a coffee when I was driving places, because that's one thing about homeschooling they don't tell you. You end up in the car a lot. And another was the caffeine. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to say no to caffeine, because I do love having a coffee, and I'm an adult. I should be allowed to have coffee every so often. So I've cut that down to 2 a week. And I have them, you know, I go to the farmer's market on a Saturday and I have a nice coffee in the morning. And then on Mondays when we're at drama, I have a coffee with the parents. And just not saying, well, I'm never going to have a coffee again, yeah, has also been helpful. And same, like, yeah, I've improved. I'm eating a lot better and I'm eating foods that suit me. But the new burger bar's opened in my suburb, and a friend and I are going out for burgers for lunch today.
Yeah, awesome. Now, I think you need to make sure that you don't make it so strict that it becomes restrictive, because the minute you start to restrict everything, you sort of just want to rally against it. So you need to make sure it's, you know, it has some fun in it too, that's for sure.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, it's two coffees a week or a burger once a month is not going to do anything bad.
No, absolutely. So how do you approach, I guess, mealtimes and snack time with the kids? Obviously, you are home and then you're out and about. So do you have a structured mealtime with the kids where you sit down and have a morning tea together like they would at school, or is that they just sort of help themselves? How does that work for you guys?
They make their own breakfast most mornings, and I, because I get up earlier than the kids, and then they all sort of do their own thing. I generally make lunch for everybody, so I'll make myself lunch and the kids lunch. If we're home, it might be something hot in winter. If we're feeling, we might have soup or chicken wings or something. But if we're going out, I pack all the lunches in the morning, so we've all got stuff to eat. They graze themselves in between. So they make breakfast, I do lunch and dinner. We sit down around the table every night for dinner, let's say 6 nights a week. So we still do the dinner table thing, but I do lunch and I do dinner and they do breakfast, and then I've always got snacks in the fridge or the when they were little, they had their own little mini fridge, and I'd put all the snacks in the fridge and they could feed themselves. Because, yeah, they do graze.
No, we have a snack fridge too. I don't know if I got the idea off you or
yeah, you might have.
I think I did, because we had an opportunity. My nan was going into nursing home and she has this small little bar fridge going. And so I took it, and the rule is that anything's in that fridge, the kids can just go and eat it sort of any time of the day. And it was really, really good. I wish I had it when they were much younger, because I didn't start it till all in school, and it still worked a treat. I think it works really well in terms of independence, and kids learn to, and if there's only good options in there for them as well, like they learn that the snacking is, you know, just fruit and crackers and whatever it happens to be, yeah, and that sort of stuff.
And I'm not always in the kitchen. Like, you know, that's one of the things you see on social media, you know, at school holidays and all the parents are like, oh, they're hungry again. I'm like, yeah, that's actually a thing. That's a thing.
Absolutely. Just a quick question to finish up before we finish up. So do you have a support network? You mentioned the Facebook group, like I said, in real life support group, other than your family and friends that you use to help you with the challenges with the girls and or homeschooling and that sort of stuff. Do you have networks just for you?
Yeah, I've got some really excellent friends that I met when the kids were babies, and we see each other pretty regularly. And I've got homeschool family. I've got a really excellent homeschool community of close friends. So I'm lovely mums, great kids, and we're all really close. My parents don't live close by. They live interstate, but my in-laws live around the corner. So that's incredibly helpful too. So, and I've always got, you know, my mum's always available on the phone. So I have a really good support network, I think. As far as for me, I think when you homeschool, it's great if you can like the parents, because you see a lot of them. It's not like where you drop them at school, and if you hate the parents, you just sort of nod at the gate. Like when we go to the group on a Thursday, I'm there for 4 hours usually, sort of thing, 3 to 4 hours. And so it helps if you like the other mums. So I would say it's good if your kids like the other kids, but you kind of want kids and mums as a package. Or dads.
I can get that in for sure.
Yeah, I think that applies everywhere, but I think you can probably avoid the parents you don't like easier at school.
Yeah, for sure. So lastly, onto a few quick questions. What books had the biggest influence on you as a parent? And it doesn't actually have to be a parenting book.
Challenging Assumptions in Education by Wendy Priestnitz, I think is how you pronounce her surname. That was probably the best homeschooling book that I read. When my eldest was a baby, I read Parenting for a Peaceful World by Robin Grill, and that probably changed how I thought about parenting. Gentle Birth, Gentle Mothering by Dr. Sarah J. Buckley. I had home births with two of my youngest kids, and that kind of changed how I parented and making choices for me. Like having a really empowering, amazing second birth at home allowed me to say, hey, I can make choices that are different from everybody else, and that can be okay, and that can actually be amazing. And that probably led me into homeschooling, really, just being able to say, oh, that worked really well. I made that choice. Not everybody agreed, but it was awesome. And then to go on and to say, well, nobody thinks I should homeschool, but I'm going to do it anyway, and it's been awesome.
Yep. I love that. I think it's a confidence and making your own decisions and being happy with them is so, so important.
Yeah, I agree.
They're fantastic. I've not heard of any of those books.
So oh, really?
I have to go check them all out, actually. Well, The Gentle Birth, I'm probably over the birth one, but the other two.
Well, past it, but at the time it was life-changing.
I'll definitely check out the other two. So what item have you last bought that's helped make family life easier?
Oh, okay. We bought a minivan.
How cool.
We've got an 8-seater now. I know I've only got 3 kids, but it's amazing.
Being a Triago owner, I know the minivan concept. It's very good.
I resisted it and, it's been amazing. Love it. I love it so much.
So what advice would you give to a new mum? And it doesn't have to relate to babies necessarily, but something that you've learnt over your 10 or 11 years of parenting that's been a game changer for you.
No book knows your kid. And you can read all the books that you want and you can take whatever bit you like from whatever book if you like. You can read no books. But no parenting expert, whether they be, you know, like a sleep trainer or somebody who's really a gentle parent, they still aren't you and they still don't have your kids. So you can like all the philosophies in the world, but you still need to take into account who you are and who your kids are.
Oh, look, I'm going to leave it on that note because I think that's so perfect, Shay. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and all the best rest of the year with your girls.
Great, thanks. Good to talk to you, Nicole.
Well, like me, I hope you found some tips to help you organise the chaos of family life in this episode. If you've enjoyed the show, I'd love it if you would subscribe in iTunes. And if you really wanted to share the love, you could even leave us a review for us in iTunes as well. Leaving a review means it will be easier for other families to find the show and they can benefit from the tips too. If you'd like to get in touch, the easiest way to do so is to head to playingwithkids.com/podcast. You can find all my contact details there. Thanks so much for listening to This Family Life.
Jack Rabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.